Hello and welcome to Country Stride, the podcast dedicated to the landscapes, people and heritage of Cumbria and the Lake District. I'm here today on a fairly cool, very breezy and overcast day in the car park at Seatoller with author, illustrator and our guide for today's walk, Mark Richards. Hello, Mark.
Hello, David. Well, we're back in a setting that reminds me of our earliest days, actually. Yeah, when we did our trial run, our dummy run, before we actually recorded our proper first one, we came up here to Seatoller and up to the Wad Mines, so we followed the Derwent.
Yes, goodness. It's a step back in time for us. Fabulous Valley, of course, one of the great ascent routes of Scawfell Pike, Great End, dominating the valley head.
A little bit of cloud on Great End, tantalising my eyes. Certainly it's a great place to wander, up Grainsgill or up to Styhead. But today we're going nowhere near that. Our minds might drift up there at some time, but I think our guests will keep our minds very local.
Yes, forget the grand scale ambitions of those fabulous big fells. Today we're talking about the very tiniest things, Mark. And in fact, a great deal of today's podcast, unusually for us, will be spent in this car park. And the reason for this, this has been on my long list for a little while, and we found just the man to guide us around this neck of the woods today. What are we talking about today, Mark?
We're talking about lichen. It's all around here, and if we go up the valley a little bit more, we'll probably find some more.
Lichen indeed. So for many of us, I guess we interact with lichen on dry stone walls, on old trees often. And I don't know about you, Mark, I guess I tend to wander on by. I think I would notice it on that mosaic of colours and textures on a dry stone wall, and I think I appreciate it. But I'll be honest, I don't know much about lichen.
No, one from another. I couldn't put a name to them. I couldn't explain them. But I'm sure our guest today, Pete Martin, is a great enthusiast for lichen. He's got an instinct for it and an infectious desire to get the message across that it's very special.
That's right, Mark. And we're going to wander very gently up Dale. We're going to talk a little bit about pollution. We're going to talk about how lichen can infer historic land use. And we're going to learn about some of the incredible properties of something that isn't actually a single organism even. These are fascinating little mini ecosystems. We've been given little magnifying glasses so that we can look really closely at these tiny worlds. And I'm very much looking forward to this. It's a little bit of a different kind of podcast for us today, when we forget about the macro and zoom into the micro. I can see Pete over there. He's just the other end of the car park. So let's go and join him and begin today's Country Stride.
In a National Trust car park at the foot of Honister Pass, in effect. I'm looking up towards Thornthwaite Fell, and I can see Coombe Head, Rosthwaite Cam. This is to the south of where I'm standing. And then behind me, birch trees. It's a popular place in the little hamlet of Seatoller, which means the place of the alder trees. Now, I'm in the company of Pete Martin. Great to see you, Pete. Can you give us a bit of background as to where you come from and what's your interest in life?
Well, I'm Pete Martin. I've lived in Ambleside for 20 years. 20 years this month, in fact. And I've got a number of different interests. Recent years, I've started to go down the rabbit hole that is lichens. And a few years ago, I stopped proper paid employment and lichens seem to have taken over my life. There's a lot of different things about lichens that are absolutely fascinating.
Well, it's wonderful you've given us this opportunity for a little bit of lichenology, which I think is probably isn't a term. So, where are you initially going to take us?
So, we're going to start off in this car park, and the joke is that lichen trips never ever leave the car park. And whilst a good car park can occupy one for 3 or 4 hours, we're going to be a lot less time here today. And then we're going to wander along the road a bit, down towards Seathwaite, which is famous for being the wettest place in England. And then we're going to go along the Beckside a bit and look at some walls and some trees there. And maybe we'll end up by the Borrowdale Ewes.
And I believe the aim of today is to introduce me to 5 particular kinds of lichen that should be regular in our understanding of lichens.
Yes, I mean, I think that most of us can probably recognise several different types of bird without really thinking about it. We know that something's a heron or something's a blackbird or something's a gull. Well, I think you can do the same things with lichens. Now, to really look at lichens, because most of them are very small, you need to be looking through a hand lens or stoppings. But there are lichens that you can see and recognise when you're driving past at 30 miles an hour. And there are plenty of lichens that you can get a pretty good idea of what they are with just a quick glance. And what I want to do today is to introduce you to 5, each of which have got a little bit of a story attached to them, and tell you a bit about the landscape and the environment and the air quality and history.
So we'll take a few steps and begin our journey. Well, we haven't moved far, inevitably. I can get a view, which I didn't see previously. I've just moved aslant enough to be able to see Bessie Boot, which I think is a great name for a fell top. It's Rosthwaite Fell, or it's the fell top that Wainwright identifies. I prefer the further up the ridge towards Rosthwaite Cam. There's a higher bit there. They're lovely fells. There's swallows swinging round here. There's some Scots pines here, just adding character to the setting. There's a gentle breeze. But what I really want to know is, what are lichens?
Well, lichens are not, and often it's easier to define things by excluding everything else. So lichens are not an individual thing, like a human being or a herring gull. Lichens are at least 2 things. There's always at least a fungus involved. And there's something which photosynthesizes. That might be an algae, or it might be a cyanobacteria, or a blue-green algae to the older ones amongst us, or it might be both. And recently, in the last 15 years or so, scientists have discovered that there's also other things involved, like yeasts, bacteria. The traditional idea is that the algae or the cyanobacteria photosynthesize, so they make sugars, food from the sun, and the fungus provides a sort of structure, a kind of casing to protect that algae. So they both get something out of it. The algae get something protective so they can live in places that are maybe a bit drier or maybe a bit more sunny or maybe a bit more subject to friction than they otherwise would be able to. And the fungus doesn't have to go out and engage in complicated long-distance relationships to try and get food. It just nicks it from the algae. And you could look at a lichen as an ecosystem of different things getting different things out of it and putting different things in. And lichens have evolved at many different times in the last 400 million years. They're not all descended from one another. It's a relationship that an awful lot of fungi get into. And quite a lot of algae too.
400 million years, that's a long time.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, it's back to Devonian times, so it's back to the kind of times of those rocks that make the Eden Valley and that sort of thing. That's when we know lichens existed, because there are fossilised lichens there. Now, it may be that they're older than that, and they're kind of everywhere.
When I think of algae, I think of water bodies.
And I think algae need to have some water around in order to photosynthesize. But there's quite a lot of free-living algae. You know that red stuff that you see on the tops of fells? There's loads on the top of Crinkle Crag, and you see it on trees sometimes. That's an algae. It's a Trentipolia algae. What being in a lichen enables the algae to do is to survive in even deserts, where it's very, very dry a lot of the time, but occasionally there's enough dew. And that means that if the algae is protected by the fungus to make a lichen, then the algae can carry on photosynthesizing and it survives.
Cyano, that means there's some blue element in it.
Cyanobacteria are blue-green algae. They used to be called blue-green algae. Now we know they are bacteria that can photosynthesize. Some cyanobacteria have a very bad press from pollution in Windermere and poisoning dogs and that sort of thing. Many cyanobacteria just get on with their lives in shady, damp spots and don't really harm anybody. Or your dog.
They obviously reproduce in some way.
There's kind of two different ways in which lichens and lots of things reproduce. Sexual reproduction and asexual reproduction. For sexual reproduction, which is what the fungus does, kind of on its own, there are special fruiting bodies on many lichens, and we'll see some of those today, and they often have descriptive names like jam tarts or wine gums. And in those fruiting bodies, spores are produced, and they get chucked out, and those spores, fungal spores in general, are just floating around. Probably every breath we take, we breathe in fungal spores. And the idea is that those fungal spores travel around, land somewhere, and if they land somewhere with the appropriate algae nearby, then the fungus part of the lichen can develop and a, let's call it a baby lichen, will grow. That's sexual reproduction. This is obviously a much simplified version. And then there's asexual reproduction. Now, asexual reproduction produces clones. I suppose an analogy with a human being would be that if we did asexual reproduction, it would be like our big toe, say, falling off and producing a new mark. And each time Mark's big toe fell off, there would be another mark. Lichens have developed a number of different ways of asexually reproducing, and all of them are basically bits falling off in different ways. Now, sometimes that's by producing a powder where the fungal hyphae, which are kind of those white bits that you get on mushrooms when you buy them at the supermarket down at the bottom, that sort of thing, is wrapped together with algal cells, tiny little powder, and we'll see some of this, and that then kind of, you know, a slug wanders across the top of the lichen, and that ceridia, posh name for a powder, is stuck to the slug, and the slug wanders off and it comes off somewhere else along the way. Or sometimes you get things that are called isidia, which are little pegs where there's the kind of outgrowth of the lichen with its skin, its cortex, and the algae and the fungal strands inside, and that's knocked off by the tree creeper or whatever as it scrabbles up the tree, and then it lands somewhere and it starts to grow if the conditions are right, and you get a clone of the previous one. Or sometimes it's just great big chunks of lichen falling off, and oh yeah, it's all right, well, I can grow there, and so they grow.
Now, there's so many vagaries and maybes in what you're saying. This is a comparatively new area of research.
Over time, a lot of people have spent a lot of time looking at lichens. But one of the things that has kind of revolutionised all this sort of science is DNA work, which is only in the last 25 years, really, that you've been able to start working out what an organism actually is. Obviously very exciting is if you can isolate the DNA for any organism, you can kind of say, it's that. If you're looking at something that was by its nature is at least two separate things, and it's growing in an environment where there's probably loads of bits of other algal crud and dead insect and three lichens growing on top of each other and a fungus that grows on top. Yes, just like big fleas having little fleas, lichens have fungi that grow on them. It gets quite difficult to isolate any one thing that's going on. one of the drivers for them discovering recently that there were yeasts involved in lichens was there being two lichens that they discovered with early DNA work had exactly the same fungus and exactly the same thing that photosynthesizes in it. Now, they know they're different things because one of them is traditionally used as a food source by the native peoples of that region, and the other one's poisonous to human beings.
A bit of a clue there, isn't it?
And I suppose the other thing that goes there is that, generally speaking, people haven't done huge amounts of research into lichens in the same way as people haven't done huge amounts of research into lots and lots of different things. People spend their time and effort putting money into researching high-velocity rifles, projectiles, and cures for cancer. Those are entirely understandable because that's where the money is.
Yeah, this could be a wonderful health thing, but we just haven't discovered it yet.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the other things about lichens is that the fungal partners produce, in many, many lichens, an array of really interesting and weird chemicals. You've got a bit of a twig in your hand, Mark.
Indeed.
And if you look at that, what colour would you say the main lichen on that twig was?
I'd say yellow or lemony tone.
Right.
Citrus.
Right. Well, that lemony thing is the colour that's of a chemical called parietin. The lichen is called, in its Sunday name, its scientific name, Xanthoria parietina, sometimes called the sunburst lichen.
Right.
And that chemical, parietin, is produced as a sunscreen. So the fungus produces this sunscreen to protect the algae against excess sunlight. If you look through your hand lens, Mark, you'll see that some of it is really quite bright yellow.
Absolutely.
And some of it is a bit paler, maybe bluey green.
Definitely bluey green.
Right. Well, just like we don't slap on the sunscreen on a December day, Xanthoria parietina doesn't get the parietin out if there's no need. If you go and look on the road signs in the centre of Ambleside, the ones facing south have got Xanthoria parietina on them, and they're bright yellow. And if you go around the other side, on the sides facing north, it's the bluey green.
There you are. Now, you've hinted at a potential use. To those people who are not tuned into the value of lichen, why do they matter?
Well, there's a number of different possible answers to that, and it kind of depends on your standpoint. I would come up with a straightforward, well, it's a living thing and therefore it matters. And the more biodiversity there is, the better an ecosystem will be, the more resilient it is, the more chance of different things surviving. And in a somewhat self-centred way, the more interesting it is to me. But in terms of what do lichens do, they photosynthesise, therefore they're taking carbon out of the atmosphere. They are the first things that arrive on any new piece of ground. A piece of ground that's scraped bare, or a piece of land that's created by a volcano, or whatever it is. Lichens are there pretty much from the beginning. Remember those fungal spores that are just floating about all the time? And so they are the starting point, they're the building blocks of our life as we know it. 10,000 years ago, end of the Ice Age is here. Retreat of glaciers, the first things that will arrive will have been lichens. People try to work out how long ago some of those glaciers were by measuring the growth of lichens. If you go to Barrow, where the fire was in the Newlands Valley, 20 years ago now, it's lichens that grow on those fire-damaged areas. So lichens are really intrinsic to the building blocks of life. And a very, very large number of insects, birds, creepy crawlies of all kind live in lichens, feed on lichens. From a purely human point of view, people have been eating them for thousands of years. People have been using them as dyes. There have been huge commercial dye operations using some lichens. Ancient Egyptian mummies were stuffed with Pseudovernia furfuracea, a lichen. Many lichens are thought to have antiseptic properties, with back to those lichen chemicals again. But really, very little work has been done on the stuff that lichens produce.
Not to disturb you too much at this early stage, can you just reassure me that a lichen is not a moss?
A lichen is not a moss. You are correct, Mark. Mosses are like a human being or a herring gull or a daffodil. They are an individual thing. A lichen is a community. In popular terminology, many lichens have been called moss. They grow together. They're closely intertwined on all the trees around here. There will be lichens and mosses growing together, fighting with each other, competing, one winning somewhere, one winning somewhere else.
I've seen them on the wall here, and they are sitting beside one another. Happy?
You obviously don't speak moss or lichen, because actually they're fighting to the nail like rats in a sack. It's just at a different time scale, and he's speaking a different language.
Brilliant. Well, we need to really get to grips with this journey you're taking us on, and actually go lichen hunting. Wow, we've moved an enormous distance around the car park.
We're nearly by the exit.
Yeah, well, that's getting exciting. We're near the exit. There you are. And it's an opportunity for me to perhaps look at three particular varieties of lichen so we can identify them. And you've given me a stick and a spying glass. Is that helpful to me?
It should enable you to see small things much more clearly. So we're going to look at three different lichens, and when we try and tell lichens apart, the first two things that really we try to do is to work out, one, how they're growing and give some sort of description to that, and the second thing is how they are reproducing. So the first one, which you've got on your stick there, Mark, the yellow one, Xanthoria parietina, the sunburst lichen. If you look through your hand lens, you should see that it looks a bit like a series of leaves or leaf lobes that are growing along the stick and overlapping. Does that
indeed
make sense?
Yeah, they are indeed. Yes, a little cascade of them.
And that is what we would call a leafy lichen. If you carry on looking at that one, you should see that there's some circular structures.
Oh, there are indeed, like acorn cups.
Yeah, or maybe a little volcano or something like that.
Yeah.
These are fruiting bodies. The posh name is Apothecia. We might call them jam tarts because the rim of the fruiting body is a different colour from the disc in the middle of the circular rim.
Yeah.
And basically the spores get pumped out through the middle bit around the rim. So that is Xanthoria parietina. It's probably Cumbria's most common lichen. It's found almost everywhere because it really likes nitrogen. So if there's nitrogen being emitted by, say, an internal combustion engine in the car park, you'll probably find Xanthoria parietina. If there's nitrogen being emitted by a large number of farm animals with a bit of manure going on, you'll probably find Xanthoria parietina. So that is the first of our three lichens. The second one, if we walk over towards the wall and try not to get knocked over by the bus, and if we stop here,
we're right up behind a Coldew coach's coach, but we're on a dry stone wall, a local slate, and there's a bit of moss, but below it, there's one stone which has got this very translucent green lichen on it.
And that colour is probably very familiar to you, Mark, from wandering over the fells.
Yes, I recognise it all over the place, you're right.
This is the second of the lichens that I think everybody who comes to the Lake District ought to be able to recognise. Its posh name is Rhizocarpon geographicum, and it's got a common name of the map lichen.
I can see that because I've just been right up close to it, and unlike the one you gave me to start with on the stick, this one is almost flat to the surface, but you sense that there's rivers in it and it's a pattern to it.
Absolutely. And when you get quite a lot of it on a surface, on a wall, because it always grows on stone and it prefers acid rocks, so you won't find it on limestone, but you'll find it on good old Lakeland slate. you'll see that there's black lines which kind of divide it, which look like a map of Europe from the late 19th century or something like that. And if you look very carefully, and you're lucky, you'll see black bits as well, which are the fruiting bodies. This is what we would call a crusty lichen, or a crustose lichen, because it's stuck on to what it's growing on, and you can't get it off without removing what it's growing on, really. You'd need a chisel.
How does it grip the surface?
It kind of goes in. The bits of fungus eat their way into the surface. Actually, if you looked at it under a microscope, you'd probably find that there's quite a bit of it on the top, more than you'd think by looking at it through our eyes. It's a remarkable thing, Rhizocarpon geographicum. It's possibly the oldest known lichen. People have found bits that they think are 9,000 years old, which is a bit older than you or
it
me.
Is.
And they sent it into space. I'd say it was quite a weird scientific thing about 20 years ago of sending living things into space. Then they put it outside the space station and saw what happened. Most living things don't do well when exposed to an airless environment with extremes of solar radiation and fluctuating temperatures that go up to warmer than you would want to be in and colder than you'd want to be in almost instantaneously. Anyway, they did that to some lichens, and the lichens were all right. Rhizocarpon geographicum was one of them, and it was perfectly happy. They brought it back in, and within a few hours it was back doing what it does with a kind of, oh, that was an interesting
holiday.
Yeah, chance for a nap. You know, that'll be around long, long after human beings have been forgotten.
I think when I die, I'm going to come back as that.
The third kind of lichen we're going to look at. Oh, we'd best wait for this
next car
to come.
We are still at the entrance, by the way,
yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
So we've come up to this ash tree. The lower bowl of the ash tree has got a lot of moss on it, but there's this tiny grey one, which is almost imperceivably there. You wouldn't actually consider this as anything at all, but you say it's something.
I do say it's something. This has got a common name, which is elf ears.
Now, I've got up close to it, and I can see exactly what you mean.
It's like a tiny little scale. Sometimes these are called scale lichens, with a thickened rim round it, like the lobe of an ear. And then there's tiny little bits of powder, which are the ceridia, the asexual reproductive bits we were talking about a bit ago. And this is quite an interesting lichen, this one, in that it was really badly affected by the sulfur dioxide that came out of burning coal. So 50 or so years ago, it was really quite rare. But this one has really bounced back, and you can find it on, I hesitate to say any, but certainly many ash trees, hazels in the Lake District. It grows on lichens. Occasionally it grows on moss on fences and wooden bridges and things like that. It's really doing quite well. It's expanding across Britain. This is a tribute to the Clean Air Act that we can see that here today.
Well, that was a great introduction to three lichens. The rowdy arrival of a coachload of young people is a good excuse for us to escape a little bit and actually leave the car park and go and find some more variants on the theme. Gee, that's necklace that he's renewing. The clip's not working. Anyway, we've just come off the road by Seathwaite Bridge. You can look up to our right. We've got bracken and a woodland rising up onto the fell. And ahead of me, I can see Thornythwaite Fell, base brown, and the mist over the top of Seathwaite Fell onto Great End. So we've got this dramatic setting and a line of cars along the road up towards Seathwaite, which is where people park when they're climbing Scawfell Pike in their abundant number. But actually, Peter, you brought us to look at this bit of wall, which shows us a new set of lichen. And many people come and look at walls, but don't see things quite the way you do.
Yes, a wall is basically just a collection of rocks, like an outcrop, but a bit more fissured with holes in between where the stones have been put. It's a kind of blank canvas for the mosses and the lichens to get to work on. And after, I don't know, 150, 200 years, you've got an array of different lichens on here. Using the wall and the different opportunities that the wall provides to grow for themselves. So you've got quite a variety of grey leafy ones.
I can see those.
And then you've got crusty ones, some of which are on the top and have great big black fruits like wine gums on.
They've got brown features as well.
Yeah, the brown is the iron drawn out of the rock.
They go right into the rock and bring iron out.
They go in and bring stuff out and they change colour. There's a whole suite of lichens that like really, really strongly metalliferous environments. So there's specific things that grow on copper mine waste and things like that. Chemically, they are beginning to work at producing soil. The soil is being made here. And if you put your mind back 10,000 years to the end of the Ice Ages, this is what would have happened here. It's what's happening in many areas of the world in deserts at the moment. You get these living crusts of lichen and a bit of moss, and then things like the ferns and so on will come along. In thousands of years, you're developing a decent soil. Now, one of the other things that lichens do, and this is quite important, is the cyanobacteria in lichens fix nitrogen from the air.
And these are the blue-green algaes?
Yes, exactly. There's loads of nitrogen in the air, but generally speaking, living things aren't very good at getting it out of the air, and most living things have developed to survive without a lot of nitrogen. Now, one of the things that are good at getting nitrogen out of the air are cyanobacteria. And there's quite a lot of lichens that live on rocks that have algae as the main photosynthetic part of them. But they also have little lumps with the name of Cephalodia, which has the cyanobacteria in them. That fixes nitrogen. In the world we live in now, strangely enough, worryingly enough, those lichens that have Cephalodia that fix nitrogen are often found in places like the Lake District not to have those Cephalodia fixing nitrogen. They don't need them because there's so much free nitrogen from our pollution. We can see when we look at a lichen that there is pollution in the air. And while we're on the subject of nitrogen pollution, there's a whole suite of lichens that live on the tops of rocks where birds perch. They like that bird perchy sort of environment. And there's this wonderful word, ornithocoprophilius.
They love splat.
Absolutely. They love splat.
Now, we've got, I suppose, about a 3 metre section of wall coming away from the bridge. How many, at a glance, do you see different varieties of lichen?
At a glance, I'm well into double figures, but I think somebody who really knew what they were talking about would double that easily.
Wow. Into the 20s anyway. I'm now already seeing walls in a different light. We'll wend our way upstream with the sparkling waters of the River Derwent, and we're going to, I believe, see something a little bit special. On trees, is that right, Peter?
Yes, we're going to go and look at some trees, some very special lichens on some really quite remarkable trees.
It's a genuine hunt. There's another snake lift. This one's a bit even more broken, I think. Come on, Pete, get through that one. I'll try and shut it. Pretty reluctant. Well, we've come through about 10 strides further from the gate, and there's an oak tree. It's got on it a variety of distinctive lichens for an oak tree, and we're right by the riverside here. Can you give us a bit of a picture as to what we're looking at here, Peter?
So we've got here the sorts of things that you'll find on thousands and thousands of oak trees across the Lake District. And there's a variety of different types of lichen on here. So you've got the kind of leafy things, sort of grey, bluey, green colour.
They project considerably.
Yeah, they're leafy and some of them are actually called fruity lichens. And then interspersed with all these kind of leafy things of different sorts, there's these what are sometimes called white splats.
Yes, a bird's dropping, bang.
Yeah, or somebody's been around with a splat gun or something, yep, squirting on the tree. And these are crustose lichens. They're very common on these sorts of trees as well. And what you've got, effectively, is this massive amount of growth on the bark of the tree. So rather than just the tree's leaves doing the photosynthesis and soaking up carbon from the atmosphere, you've got all these lichens doing the same thing. They'll soak up the water as well. So they just create this whole extra layer of life on a tree. It's like a tree in the wood has an entire forest growing on it.
This is probably a reason why a really mature tree beats the socks off lots of little sapling trees.
You asked how many lichens there were on that 3 metre stretch of wall. There'll be the same number, probably more, of different species growing on this tree. If you plant a sapling, after 5 years, you might be able to see one or two lichens on it. After 20 years, yes, there'll be some stuff, but there won't be the variety. These things are irreplaceable. Mm. And this is just a perfectly normal, maybe 100-year-old Lake District oak tree. Think how many of those there are across Cumbria.
We've scrambled up the bank, not too far. We're beating back the bracken in the boulders. We come into an ash wood, quite an open ash wood, rocks above us and rooks. And we've come up to one particular ash, which is a pretty gnarled, hollowed out specimen. It's sitting on a rock with the roots all gnarled. It's had its time in history, I would say, and it's been pollarded, and it's got, I suppose, some lichen on it. So could you tell us a little bit more about it, Pete?
I can. I mean, this is a fine example of a very old and very knackered pollard ash, or a cropping ash, as they're often called. We all know the cropping ashes in the Lake District. They're a traditional feature, and you'll find them sometimes in woods like this one, or sometimes just in fields on field boundaries. And the idea was that the tree, the ash tree, usually an ash tree, would be allowed to grow until it was maybe 10 foot high, and then the top would be lopped off, and they'd keep lopping the tops off every, 15 years or so. Each time the branches were lopped off, those poles could be used for a variety of things around the farm, or burnt if there was no other use for them. The leaves could be fed to stock over winter. I don't know when that stopped happening in the Lake District, but certainly in parts of northern Spain, I've seen them cutting the tops off ash trees in order to feed them to stock in the last 20 years. So it's a long and widespread activity. The great thing about this, from a lichen point of view, is you keep a tree's trunk growing and the pollard ash can reach a really old age. So after several hundred years, much older than an unpollarded ash, you get these marvellously gnarled, fissured old things with nooks and crannies and overhangs and hollowed bits. Some of them stay really dry in the winter rains. Some of them will get loads of water running down from the top. So there's a whole huge variety of places for different things to live in. Ash is also a tree with a more basic bark chemistry, which some lichens like. And what you tend to find in the absence of sulfur dioxide pollution is that pollard ashes get a really interesting array of lichens on them, often really quite big leafy things. Now, they've survived here because in this little bit of Borrowdale, there's been much better protection against the sulfur dioxide from the industry of Workington and Whitehaven and Barrow and Carlisle than there has been in, say, the South Lakes or Loweswater. And so here, where it's very, very wet, which is also a contributory factor, you've got these very old trees, you've got basic bark, you've got people letting these trees grow and not chopping them down. This fantastic lichen flora, the likes of which, certainly in its density, I don't think you'd find anywhere else in northern England, it's managed to survive. Nowadays, of course, there's the threat of dieback with these ashes, and it's awful to see that there are many of these ashes, most of these ashes, have branches without leaves on, and they're struggling. We don't know what it'll be like in 10 or 20 years' time, but these ashes are home to some really quite amazing things, and it's going to be a bit of a biodiversity disaster if these ashes go. Woods that have been coppiced, where the trees have been removed every 20 years, say, don't have so great a lichen flora as woods where the trees have been allowed to grow for a very long time. So if you go into some woods, you'll see that even though the trees look really old, they were coppiced 100 years ago, and that wood will probably have far fewer lichens than somewhere where the trees have been allowed to grow for 300, 400 years.
Like the wood above us, maybe.
So the wood here, where there's a history of pollarding, has got much older trees than a wood like, say, Johnny's Wood by the car park, where even though there's some really fine old trees in there, they were chopped down 100, 150 years ago, and the lichen flora there is much poorer than the lichen flora here.
What we've got here, Pete, on the boulder, actually, at the base of the tree, there's moss and lichen. Is that significant?
These are a kind of lichens. They've got the common name of dog lichens. They're a Peltigera species. And if you look at them, you'll probably be able to see, possibly with the naked eye, certainly with your hand lens, that they've got these great big teeth underneath.
So they have.
That's why they're called dog lichens.
Yes, they are.
These are quite fantastic things, really. In the lichen world, these grow very quickly. So they can grow several centimetres a year.
Ooh.
And you'll find as you go round the tree, there's quite a number of these different dog lichens.
Right.
At the end of the lobes, you see there's things like fingernails.
Absolutely. Oh, it is your fingernail.
You
were pointing.
I'll point with my stick.
Very
you
good.
Can see?
Yep, yep, I can see, yep.
Well, those are the fruiting bodies. That's what the spore comes out. So they're a bit different from the jam tarts on the Xanthoria.
Fabulous. This is the fourth of the five species that you want people, and me particularly, to register and understand.
Yeah.
And we will make an effort by putting all five lichen on the website so the listeners can perhaps get the bug that Pete obviously has got. Above this dogtooth one, we've got an area that looks like it's been whitewashed irregularly. It's encrusted with a pale area, and it's got like a cow dung in the middle of it. What are we looking at there?
Well, it's not cow dung, it's Nephroma levigata.
Well, it's so obvious, isn't it?
Up the tree a little bit, on a sort of bulging bowl with the little ash shoots with leaves coming out of it. As Mark said, there's this kind of white splat that covers, a good yard across, I guess. And then on top of that, there's a much smoother lichen. Again, a series of leafy lobes that are coming off. This is Nephroma levigatum. It's really quite rare in the Lake District. It likes basic barked ash trees, really, and there are far fewer of those about. It really doesn't like pollution. It's had a very hard time the last couple of hundred years. But hopefully some of it will survive, and in 200 years' time there'll be a lot more of it. Fingers crossed. Levigatum, by the way, is Latin for smooth.
We're on the base of a rugged slope with bracken and stone, yes. It's a woodland, and it's a very special one, I believe.
Yes, it's a remarkable woodland with probably the greatest variety of lichens in any woodland in certainly Cumbria, probably northern England. Down at the bottom here, we've got these ash pollards. And then higher up, you get more oak and hazel. And then up the top, there's more birch. And as you go up, the trees change and different trees have different bark chemistries. The climate's quite different up at the top there. It's a lot more exposed, a lot wetter, a lot more difficult for things to survive in. And you get this dramatic change in what the lichens are at the bottom here, or up the top. We're not going to go and look at the top, but there's a whole different suite of lichens growing on the trees up there. And in this really relatively small area, there's something like 250 different lichen species have been found.
Well, we're nearing the end of this podcast, which has been absolutely fascinating, but we're going to look at an area where there's been some conservation work done on what I think you hinted at was a pretty charismatic species of lichen. Well, we've broken off from the path beside the Derwent, and we've come right up the slope by a cluster of wonderfully old pollarded ash trees. And you've stopped with glee at one particular tree. My eyes have just drawn in on it, and I see some plastic netting over something. What on earth's that?
This lichen here, which has got sort of quite big lobes and a greeny bronze colour, would you say?
Yeah. Right.
This is Labaria pulmonaria, tree lungwort. If you look at it there, you can see that there's kind of little ribs on it, fancifully supposed to resemble the lungs of a human being. Back in the day of the doctrine of signatures, when we didn't bother with NICE or anything like that, we just used what looked like the problem to cure something. Tree lungwort was used for curing lung problems. It didn't work, or I don't think it worked. Labaria pulmonaria is its scientific name, and it's probably the charismatic lichen of the Atlantic rainforests. It's not restricted to wet woods. It'll grow on lots of things, but it wants clean air, and it's got that here in Borrowdale.
When you say charismatic, what are you trying to infer?
What I'm saying is this is probably the lichen that is most recognisable as a special lichen of rainforests. If you go to Western Scotland or even some of the trees where there's bigger bits in Borrowdale, you'll find that it'll grow to a good foot long, there's great brackets sticking out from the tree, it can cover the place. If you read Guy Shrubsole's book on Atlantic rainforest, you'll find he goes on and on about it lots.
Yeah. Well done, Guy.
This is the species. And in the winter of 2019 to 20, one of the trees in Borrowdale with the biggest population of this, which was up at Hollows Farm near Grange, that came down. And because it's rare, it's probably the wrong word, it's certainly threatened, a decision was made to do a load of translocating. So the lichen was taken from that tree, or some of the lichen was taken from that tree. We filled loads and loads of onion bags full of the lichen. There was so much of it. It's been put on a variety of trees around Borrowdale. The idea being that it'll take, or the reproductive bits will take, and that the species will survive. So on this tree, there are quite a number of bits, there might be seven. Some of them have been directly stapled onto the tree. Some of them have been put under a plastic mesh and then stapled to the tree in the hope that some of them will survive. It's a technique that's been known to work in some places, sometimes. Well, even though it looks very scraggy, it's definitely stuck, even without the mesh. This one, which looks the most healthy, that's also definitely in there. It's surviving. It's taken on the tree. It's only 2.5 years since we put it on this tree, so you probably need at least another decade before you can breathe a sigh of relief about it. But this is what's going to have to happen for these leafy lichens that come off trees that are at the end of their life. If we're going to save these lichens, we're going to have to transplant them, and that's going to have to be just what we spend some time doing.
It's a human intervention for the future of that particular species.
Absolutely. And it is that charismatic species. Looks a bit boring at the moment. When it's wet, it's really quite a dramatic lurid green.
Well, we've made it. We went up valley. We came up the bank, through a little gate with a sign saying Borrowdale Yews. There's the clue. We came here to this cluster of yew trees in our dummy run, our trial run of Country Stride way back in 2018. We didn't do much talking, but we actually did come to these trees. They are famous in literature. There's a lot going on here historically. Pete, can you give us a bit of a background into these yew trees?
The literature reference really is Wordsworth, who wrote about the fraternal four. And indeed, there were four Borrowdale yew trees, or four yew trees here in their little grove, in whenever it was, 200 years ago, that he wrote that. In the 1860s, One of them blew down. You can still see the remains of that one. Things take a long time to decay, and that's one of the messages that really we should be thinking about in terms of conservation of woodlands. There's a lot of things that like to live on old dead bits of wood, and we should just leave them where they are. And so there were three yew trees, or so we thought. And then in 2005, the top blew off one of them, and they did some measuring of tree rings and realised that the top branches were 1,500 years old. That's early medieval, or dark ages, as we used to call them. There's this really kind of weird-looking thing, which is like a sort of cylinder of burnished, white, shining, twisted, hollowed out in places wood, and a really quite profuse growth of yew, of conifer, that's coming out of it.
3 metres wide diameter.
Absolutely. It's a huge old thing, and, you know, that's 1,500 years worth of growth. With the advent of DNA testing, they've done some DNA testing of the yew trees here and the yew trees all around the place. The yew trees all around the place are all different. They're all individual yew trees. There's quite a lot of genetic variation within them. These three yew trees are actually two yew trees, as two of them share exactly the same DNA. So whether, and as far as I'm aware, nobody's quite worked out whether it's a bit that fell off and then rooted, or whether it's layering is the technical term for gardening, where you take the branch of a tree and put it in the soil and you effectively get a new one, or whether it's just there from the same lump of rootstock, because these things can carry on for ages and it might be that it's split and nobody's quite worked that out yet. But there are actually two yew trees now.
The
fraternal pair, yeah. There's quite a nice thing here about things not being quite what they seem when we look at them, which ties in really nicely with lichens. We see a lichen, but actually there's a fungus and an algae or a cyanobacteria within it. We don't see those until we start taking them apart. Actually, what's really going on is a bit more complicated than what we see.
Pete! Glorious moment. We've come to the end of the actual meat and matter of the conversation, but we'd like to know a little bit about yourself in terms of your relationship with this setting. And we have these quick-fire questions. What was your first Lakeland memory?
Arthur Ransome books. I was born in London. My parents were Welsh and Cornish, so the lakes were a later discovery in my life. Arthur Ransome books.
Well, we've covered that on a podcast. Have you got a favourite fell?
I would have to say Loughrigg. That's my Twitter handle. It is the nearest fell from my house. I wake up every morning and I drink two cups of tea staring at it. Countless times I've been up it. It's a really interesting place, and you could spend a lifetime going up it once a week and there would still be things that you didn't know about it.
Have you a favourite view?
A generic view, kind of looking from maybe Fairfield or maybe Red Screes or one of the other ones that's looking kind of down Windermere towards that, or maybe even High Street, that's looking down and then you see that golden glow on Morecambe Bay.
Have you a favourite season in the Lakeland year?
Spring is without doubt the most exciting. Winter is probably the most dramatic. Autumn is probably the most beautiful. Summer I'm not so keen on.
Is there a period, a moment in history, Cumbrian, Lakeland history, that you would like to go back to, and why?
Well, there's two periods. Mm-hmm. One of them is 5,000 years ago, just when the first people were beginning seriously to make an impact on the landscape. Before the elm decline, which was probably Dutch elm disease 5,000 years ago, to see what those woods were like. And the other one was about 1,000 years ago, just before the big cattle ranching things were coming in from the monasteries, and to see what was going on then.
They call them vaccaries.
Vaccaries, that's right.
Have you a favourite Lakeland pub?
I would have to say the Golden Rule.
Have you a favourite Lakeland food?
I would recommend the pork pies from Huddleston's in Windermere.
If you were to take a book, a Lakeland book, on a desert island, have you a choice in tome?
Can I take a map? Can I take the 1 to 25,000 southeast Lake District map?
Well, you can pore over that.
That's going to occupy me far longer than any book.
Was it Wainwright who said his favourite reading matter was a map? It served me well over the years. If you were Prime Minister for the day, is there one thing you would do to safeguard the landscapes of Lake District and Cumbria?
I pondered this one and I thought actually what you need to do is provide some ring-fenced money. And so probably what I'd do would be to erect an entry charge for cars coming into the Lake District, and that money is then used to set other things up. That, I think, would have to be the way it was.
When the time comes and a few friends gather in a place that means something special to you, where might that place be?
I have a suspicion it would be on Loughrigg, but I'm not going to be there, so I'm not going to be able to tell them which pub to go to.
Well, Pete, I've had a great day, and I feel really enthused about Lycan. It's been great having your company this afternoon.
Journey's end, and we're just down the valley back at Seathwaite Bridge, having visited those fraternal two.
Yeah, fraternal two. They're a great pair. So much for Wordsworth's four.
Yes, diminished in time, but even if he was correct when he was writing, it was three.
It's the DNA that found him out.
What a great day. I don't really know what I was expecting. I'd been told great things about Pete, but yeah, it's a whole world, right? We now look at these walls in a totally different way. I thought it was interesting about the sunscreen, the use of...
Yes!
It's kind of incredible, isn't it? There are applications. And to be honest with you, I mean, it sounds like we're barely scratching the surface of what these could do for humanity, if that's the only metric we put on things. But also, I mean, they're just kind of lovely things to have around, aren't they?
Yeah, it's art, really. It's like a wall painting of textures and shapes and patterns on all sorts of surfaces.
Mm. Were you liking your lichen?
I loved and liked my love of lichen.
Well, coming to the end, Mark, our usual countryside housekeeping. This is episode number...
106.
If you like this episode and have unusually just tuned in for the first time, not all of our episodes are about lichens. There are 105 previous episodes at www.countrystride.co.uk. We're very excited about Country Stride Live, Mark.
Oh, yes.
This is good, isn't it? So,
very
November...
good. 11th of November, Saturday.
11th. Ah, yes.
That's the day before Remembrance Sunday.
Oh, right. So I suppose if people are up for that, they could spend the night in Ambleside. It's taking place in Ambleside, and go up to Great Gable for the Sunday, I suppose.
Absolutely, or perhaps Castle Crag in Borrowdale.
Yes, or indeed Great Cars.
Oh, yes.
We could do this for a while. Anyway, that's it. That's very exciting. Now, tickets, I don't think will be available quite yet, but we've got the date, so save the date if you like. And it's a full day's worth of bonhomie and fascinating talks from Country Stride regulars and newcomers. If you want to be the first to hear about that, sign up for our newsletter, www.countrystride.co.uk. Don't mention the mosses. We will say goodbye for today from Country Stride.